Arguably, one of the most beloved stories, and a story that's been told over and over, and I think everybody has heard of it. Arguably, this is one of the most heartwarming. It's been told over and over. Mel Gibson even used it in his Passion of Christ movie. It's the story of the adulterous woman. Let me read it to you. And why am I talking about it? I want you to have confidence in the scripture and in the integrity of the Christian text. Let me start it. Chapter 7 of the book of Mark, verse 53. Everyone went to his home. But Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Early in the morning, he came into the temple, and all the people were coming to him. Now, when you come, you say into the temple, the word does not mean in the inner temple. There are two words for temple. One is that means the outer temple, the temple precincts, the portico around the temple. That's where Jesus went. He couldn't go in the temple. First of all, he was not a Levite, and he was not a priest. Only the priests could go in. The temple Levites even couldn't go in. They had to be on the outside. Early in the morning, he came into the temple, and all the people were coming to him, and he sat down and began to teach them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman caught in adultery, and having set her in the center, then they said to him, to Jesus, "Teacher," meaning rabbi, "this woman has been caught in adultery in the very act." Now, in the law, rather, Moses commanded us to stone such women. What do you say? Verse 6, they were saying this, testing him, so that they might have grounds for accusing him. But Jesus stooped down. He didn't answer. And with his finger, wrote on the ground. But when they persisted in asking him, he didn't answer. He just right. They said, okay, you got an answer here. They persisted in asking him. He straightened up and he said to them, "He who is without sin among you, let him cast the first stone." Let him throw the first stone at her. Verse 8, again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. When they heard it, they began to go out one by one, beginning with the older ones, and he was left alone and the woman where he was in the center of the court. Straightening up, Jesus said to her, "Woman, where are they? Where are they? Did no one condemn you?" And she said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said, "I do not condemn you either, or neither do I condemn you." However you want to translate that. "Go, from now on, sin no more." That's the story. It starts in verse 53. Now, I want you to know a little bit about this. Most scholars, whether they're liberal or conservative, say this was not a part from verse 53 of chapter 7 to verse 11 of verse 8 was not a part of the original Gospel of John. Not. Even though this was an intriguing story, it has pathos, it has its suspense, it has a cleverness on Jesus' part, how he doesn't answer, he's one way or the other. Now, here's the evidence. I want you to be the judge whether this is should be in the gospel. Okay, here's the evidence for omitting this from the actual inspired text. First, the external evidence. It is absent from the oldest Greek manuscripts, all the way back into the 3rd century, which means the 200s. They were not there. On those earliest, they call them P for papyrus. Papyrus is what I want to say. Papyrus, the 3rd century. They were not on P 75. They were not on P 65. They were not on any of the 4th century old capitalized, they call them uncials, they're all in capital letters in Greek, but they're from the 4th century, which means the 300s. That story does not appear in what is part of the Gospel of John in those third centuries and the fourth century. You know, even in those things, some of them are damned. You know, some even when the text was damaged to the point in John where that was, the surviving leaves of it showed, when scholars try to put it together, there's no room for that story to have been in that Gospel of John. Many of the later Greek manuscripts that include it mark it in a special sign or symbol, like an asterisk, to show that it was not in the original writing of the Apostle John. Many of those manuscripts. It is found also in several different locations in other manuscripts, later manuscripts. It doesn't show up till somewhere in around the 900s or 1200s A.D. It doesn't show up, and they didn't put it into a manuscript. Here it was located after verse 52 of John 7. In some manuscripts, it's located after verse 36 of John 7. Some after verse 44 of John 7. Some after John 7 and verse 25. Different manuscripts have that story plugged in different places. It's even located in the Gospel of Luke in some manuscripts, in chapter 21 and verse 38. Right after that, it's plugged in at that spot. It's also in Luke chapter 24, verse 53, in some manuscripts. It's absent from the ancient translations, the old ancient, like the Latin Vulgate, early ancient ones, the Coptic scriptures, the things from the Syriac version, the Peshitta. It's the old Latin, the Syriac, which is the Peshitta, and the early copies of that Peshitta. It's absent. You don't see that story in the book of John. Neither do we have any comment from the early Greek fathers, you know, Origen, Tertullian, Irenaeus, and some of these guys who read the Greek like you read the newspaper or like you read a book. They read the Greek that well. They just, you know, read it all the time. But there was no comment. None of them mentions this story. Not one comment on it from those early church fathers. It is present in the 6th century in the Vatican, in the Western manuscript called the Bizet. It's called Codex D. It's in that, and it's in the Latin Vulgate that was translated from that codex and in later editions of the Syriac, later editions, but not in the early editions. That's what we call the external evidence. If you're judging, should this passage, should that little story be included as part of the original Bible and text, you know, both conservative and liberal scholars will say no, not based on this evidence. Now here's another part of the internal evidence. The vocabulary and style of this passage from that is in the Greek from that's installed in most texts from chapter 7, verse 53 to 8, verse 11, the vocabulary and style are more like the style of Luke than they are like the style of John. It was placed, again, in some manuscripts after Luke chapter 21 and verse 38, and in others after Luke 24 and verse 53. So the vocabulary in it is not like John's. There are words in that are alien from the rest of the Gospel of John. They don't have these words in them. It totally breaks the context. If you look at the context, I'm going to read a little bit of the context. I'm going to start in verse 47 of chapter 7. Remember, Jesus just got through talking about he that comes to me out of his innermost being will flow rivers of living water. Let's take a look. The Pharisees then answered, "You have not been led astray, have you?" Because people couldn't figure out, you know, whether to bring Jesus and remember we talked about that last sermon about how people are persuaded by others. But the crowd which does not know is accursed. Then you have Nicodemus in verse 50, who came to him before, being one of them, said, our law does not judge any man unless it hears from him and knows what he's doing. Does it? They answered him, are you from Galilee? You're not from Galilee also, are you? Search and see whether no prophet arises out of Galilee. Then in verse 53, that's inserted. Everyone went to his home, but Jesus said, then you have all the way down to verse 11. Now let's look at verse 12 now. If you got right verse 52, the last word, search and see there's no prophet that comes out of Galilee. Verse 12, Jesus spoke again, saying to them, to the very conversation he's having with the Pharisees here, I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. So the Pharisees said to him, you're testifying about yourself, and your testimony's not true. Jesus said, even if I testify, and so on. You'll see that follows in the exactly what they were saying. So that little story was inserted here by scribes in this position, in my opinion. I want your opinion. What do you think? It breaks the context of Jesus' discussion with the Jewish leaders after the Feast of Tabernacles, all the way from chapter 7, verse 1, all the way to verse 52. And then you have to pick it up in verse 12 of chapter 8. It begins again. There are, by the way, no parallels in the Synoptic Gospels. There are no parallels of this story. No other gospel has this story. I know it's a beloved story, and it's a fascinating story. Now, Bruce Metzger, in his textual criticism, you know, he has many reasons why that was not in the original Greek. It's not in the original Gospel of John. Besides which, the account raises many questions. A concerned reader, if you're a concerned reader and you were looking at this, you would say, well, where's the man that she was caught with? She was caught, that passage says, in the very act. Well, where's the man here? You know, both of them should be stoned according to the law of Moses. In Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 10, it talks about if there's a man and a woman who commit adultery, you know, and he commits adultery with his wife's friend's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall be stoned to death. I mean, both of them. Then the only way that could be adultery on her part is she had to be married. The only way it could be adultery on the man's part is he had to be having relations with a married woman. You remember, you're allowed to have more than one wife. You could take another woman. You say, I want you. You come with me. I want to take you as my wife and come on in, and I'll support you and so on. So she had to be married. Again, you have that. Both of them. Where is he? That should have been stoned. Nobody asks. Not even Jesus in this account asks, where is he? Now, nobody asked that. It's left completely out. So anybody reading it would have a natural question. Why didn't they find him? The second thing is, did Jesus think that the law of God given by Moses was no longer in force and should not be obeyed? Did he think that? Now, in other cases, we see he would say to some, or heal them, the lepers, go show yourself to the priests according to the law. You have to go to the temple, show yourself to the priests, make that sacrifice, you were healed of leprosy. He sent them right away. But here, does he think, that you shouldn't stone them? What does that mean? Does he think that sins, no matter what kind of sin, should not be punished at all? This woman was worthy of a sin of death according to the law of Moses. She was caught in adultery, which means she was unfaithful to her husband. In this story, I mean, you know, I don't know if the story is even true, but I mean, we have the story here. Does Jesus say, well, excuse any sin? What sin? What if they had said, this woman, we caught her, she murdered somebody, should we stone her to death? What would that be? There are many people who say, well, this was a story that they had targeted this woman. They were just going to, it was like a lynching mob. And Jesus saw that it was lynching, and he was not going to let them get away with it. He was not going to do it. And so he just didn't want to do it. So he told them sins, you know. Now, does he think sins of any kind should not be punished at all? That's a question. Third, another question. When Jesus said, let him who has no sin throw the first stone. Now, I've always thought that that sin meant a sin of the same punishment. That's the way I've always taught it, that just any sin. Actually, the Greek just says sin. Okay, whatever you want to say a sin is a sin. And it's some kind of transgression of the law, not trusting God, behavior that is against God's law, a rebellion against God, something like that. But is Jesus saying, when he says, you know, let him who has no sin throw the first stone, now are we to believe that no one who has sins can sit in a position as a judge or as a ruler and say that you're guilty of this, that he has no right to do it? He cannot enforce a penalty on anyone else if he has any sin. Now, a lot of anti-death penalty advocates would use this passage to say Jesus did not believe in the death penalty. Therefore, we shouldn't have the death penalty in our society at all. But is that what Jesus is saying? Is that what Jesus would really say? I don't know. Was Jesus marching up and down in front of the crosses that were, they crucified people sort of regularly in that time. Anybody that was a traitor to Rome and so on, many of them were crucified. On the day he was crucified, there were two other people crucified, at least two others. And so was he protesting? Does he go up and down and protest that these shouldn't be killed? I don't see any of that in the scriptures. Are we saying that somebody who has any sins cannot render a sentence? If you can't sit on a jury and say that person is guilty and that person should spend life imprisonment or is worthy of the death penalty? You can't say that if you have any sins. I don't know how you take that. So it creates a lot of questions. This story creates a lot of questions. And there are various takes on this story. Some people say her husband set her up. You can put together her husband set her up with a single man or somebody and that he escaped and so he wanted her to be put to death. Or the Pharisees had it in for her. And they wanted her to be killed and so on. I mean, all of that is fanciful, and people are trying to figure out why and how we can put that away and explain it. The truth is that it doesn't belong in the Bible. It's not inspired part of the book of John. As sweet a story as it is, and it has intrigue, it has pathos, it has mercy and all that, but it creates too many questions. It interrupts. There is no evidence of it in the earliest manuscripts. It just does not appear. And it creates lots and lots of questions about Jesus, about what he believed, about the law. Does it pit him against Moses and the law of God? And Jesus knew it was a trap. I mean, the thing says they did this so they could trap him. That meant that if Jesus said, go ahead and stone her, then what kind of a mercy guy are you? And if he said, don't, then you're against the law of Moses. So he didn't, in this story, he says nothing. They're very clever. It's what he put together. It's just not the inspired part of John's gospel.